weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the U of I.
And I'm Trent Ford, state climatologist at the Prairie Research Institute. And today, we're talking about changing leaves, growing apples and pumpkins, all things fall weather.
Trent, before we dive into fall, I want to ask you, why do we have seasons in general?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And honestly, this answer can encapsulate like the first 4 weeks of the intro to weather climate course that I used to teach, but it won't take me 4 weeks to explain. So the Earth is round, is a sphere, is not flat. We'll get that out of the way. And it's tilted. It's tilted at right now about 23.5 degrees. But if you hang around for a few hundred thousand years, it'll be tilted differently. But right now, 23.5 degrees. And the Earth revolves around the sun. We've known that for like 600 years now. So as the Earth revolves around the sun, because it's tilted, there are certain times of the year when the northern hemisphere where we is tilted more towards the sun. That's what we call summer, and more away from the sun. That's what we call winter. Halfway in between those two peak seasons, we have spring and fall. That's when the equator is most directly pointed towards the sun. Now, to break a big myth here, the amount of the sun's energy that we get here in Illinois, and therefore the temperature, generally speaking, of the air, it is not so much determined by how close or far we are from the sun, but instead the angle at which we're pointed to the sun. So in the summer here, because we're roughly, northern Illinois is roughly halfway between the equator and the pole, roughly. So when we are pointed towards the sun in summer, we have longer days, the sun stays up, we get more energy, and it's warmer. Flip side, in the winter, we're pointed more away from the sun. Our days are shorter. The sun stays up long, shorter period of time. Nights are longer. We get less energy. It's colder. And then fall and spring are somewhere in between. So that's why we have the seasons. And that's why every single day that goes by after June 20th, the days get slightly shorter. The sun stays out slightly for a slightly shorter period of time until December. And our air temperature gets cooler, generally speaking.
And what is fall weather typically like in Illinois, and what kind of weather can we expect this fall?
Yeah, fall is my favorite time of the year, not only because kind of culturally it's fun. I mean, like later on, we're going to be talking about apples and pumpkins and who doesn't like that kind of stuff. But also from a weather standpoint, it's also one of the best weather seasons because we start fall. So meteorological fall goes from September 1st through November 30th. Astronomical fall goes from September 20th roughly to December 20th. Either way, we start fall warmer, generally speaking. It's more like an extension of summer, so warm days. But unlike the kind of middle of summer where it's just unbearably humid in Illinois, we tend to be drier in the fall, partly because our air is no longer just directly screaming out of the south of the Gulf of Mexico, but also because our landscape is generally drier. Crops are no longer are mature or maybe not even in the field anymore, so there's no corn sweat to highlight another topic we've talked about. And so that means that, yeah, it can be warm in September, but it cools down rather quickly, and that lack of humidity is very comfortable. As we move into October, November, it starts to become cooler. We start to maybe see some frost. And I think in my mind, the most perfect day is the day where you walk outside in the morning, you need a jacket, but by the afternoon, you can take it off, either short or long sleeves. And at nighttime, you can build your fire and sit around it with a hoodie on. And so that's what fall is like in Illinois. And by the time we end fall, oftentimes we'll see maybe a first snow and some below freezing temperatures that remind us that winter's on the way. The kind of weather that we can expect this fall, it's been a bit of a mixed bag. We actually started fall weather a little early. Mid-August to late August was actually quite a bit cooler than normal. And then September, the heat sort of came back. But again, like I mentioned, it was a drier heat. It wasn't that humid heat, which means that as soon as that sun goes down at night, it's very pleasant out. As we move forward, that warmer than normal temperature is what the outlook is showing for October, as well as the period from October through the beginning of December. So I will put a big asterisk there, though, is that when I say warmer than normal for October and November, it doesn't mean warm. Every day we go that goes towards the end of the year, the average temperature for that day, climatologically, like over many, many years, is less than the day before it, because we're going kind of on the downslope of temperatures from summer. So that means that even above normal temperatures in October and November can still be cool, can still be jacket or sweater weather.
At least the weather's turned.
Oh, sweater weather.
Sweater weather.
Sweater weather.
Oh, God, I would love
finally, sweater weather. Sweater weather.
It's about time.
It's about time. Sweater weather. Finally.
For those just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about Illinois weather and climate. We're talking today all about fall weather. To talk about an essential Illinois fall activity, apple and pumpkin picking, we are joined by Randy Graham, co-owner and president of Curtis Orchard. Welcome, Randy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so Randy, how's the pumpkin and apple crop looking at Curtis this year? Have you guys been impacted by the recent drought?
We have been impacted some. The apple crop, I'd say, did a little bit better than the pumpkin crop. The timely rains and, of course, deeper rooting systems of those trees allowed for apple size to be quite good, actually. We had some gaps in the rainfall, but when the rainfalls came, they seemed to be good enough to kind of keep pushing those fruits ahead. So they did a little bit better. I'd say numbers on pumpkins are pretty solid, but size definitely not what we're used to seeing.
Yeah, and so when you're thinking about obviously with apples, you're thinking about planting trees years ahead of when you're going to grow. But for other types of either annuals or kind of the different maybe quicker growing perennials, do you plant different varieties of crops depending on if you're seeing or thinking about wetter, drier conditions in the summer and fall? Or does that not really affect you too much?
It doesn't really affect you too much. It's for us, it's whether we roll out some of the major irrigation systems if we're seeing a dry weather pattern shaping up. But you only have a limited window of time in which to do that, particularly I'm speaking of pumpkins. Mm-hmm. If you're raising 17 acres of pumpkins, that is a temporary system that has to be taken up at the end of the season. So you look carefully at the weather patterns before you roll that out, because it takes over a week to put the whole thing in place. And you have to do it before the plants get too large to work in that field. Mm. So you do it before the vines start to run. That's sort of the key metric for anything pumpkin related, be it weed control or cultivation or rolling out irrigation. You have to make the call, usually at a time where you're not quite sure what the future holds, but I look at the projections, like the 90-day, the 30-day projections, mm-hmm. to make that determination.
Yeah, interesting.
So, Randy, what is the best time to pick apples and pumpkins this fall?
Well, the snarky answer would be whenever they're ready. But I don't mean it to sound that way. But the reason I say that is we actually design our orchard to have apple picking from very early in our season, around the end of July, until November. So it's mainly based on varieties. Varieties each have their own special season, and many of them have different lengths of season. So you'll go with some early ripening varieties. The earliest one for us is Lodi, and that one actually ripens before we even open. So that's kind of a special case, if you will. Then, and we grow that for some particular applesauce makers in our region that just absolutely will not accept any apple but that one. So we actually sell and market that apple before we even open. But then when we open, we have some early varieties, a couple of pie varieties like Williams Pride and Prima, and they happen to just have a shorter growing season. So then you get into some sweeter dessert apples, you would call them. They're good for eating fresh and people like that. Ginger Gold is one of the early ones. So people who love Golden Delicious, Golden Delicious really isn't an August apple, it's a September apple. So they'll come looking for that sweet golden apple and we'll say, well, Golden Delicious aren't ready yet, but we've got Ginger Gold for you to pick. And most people love that variety. So then we just progress throughout the season. And part of our planning for the orchard's future is trying to find apples that fill whatever gaps we see. We like to have two or three varieties available at any given time for people to pick so that it's more interesting than just coming out and saying, well, here's your one choice. You know, mm-hmm. you want to be able to say, you know, well, we got two, three, four varieties available for you. And that's just done by selection. We grow about 26 different varieties in the orchard. A number of them were developed, at least in part, here at the University of Illinois, sometimes in coordination with Purdue and Rutgers. So it's kind of fun to be able to grow things that were developed locally, and sometimes they're kind of oddball varieties that you won't find in the grocery store, and that's kind of fun for people to find, and oftentimes they'll find one that they really like, and of course that builds what you might call the loyalty that you're looking for mm-hmm. from your customers. And interestingly, in spite of the warmer weather that we've been seeing in the early part of our growing season and picking season, the apple picking has been pretty strong. Sometimes in years past, if it was hot and it wasn't fall-like, people just didn't really think apples yet. But this year we had enough of a cool period there a couple weeks ago that sort of it kicked people into that fall mood. And I think they kind of see this recent warm trend as just an anomaly rather than we're still in summer, you know?
So to follow up there, I'm going to preface this question, which is probably the most important question we're going to ask all day here. I'm going to preface this by saying that I am not a Honeycrisp fan for eating fresh. I know it's blasphemous, but it tastes like a giant ball of sugar water to
you
me.
You may be alone.
That's fine. I am a. I tend to navigate towards the heirloom varieties, but for Jonathan, Cortland's are the ones. Jonathan's are very challenging to find in the grocery store, so I would appreciate that you all have them. It just tastes more apple-y to me. But with that said, what is your favorite type of apple for eating fresh?
That's always a tricky question for me because honestly, my flavor profiles kind of move around, if you will. Like some years, my favorite one is a Jonathan. I think mm-hmm. Jonathan is the most identifiably apple-tasting mm-hmm. apple mm-hmm. that there is. And then you've got Granny Smith, which is not traditionally considered an eating apple, but that is the flavor profile that all sour apple candies and things are based on. If you taste a Granny Smith, you'll go, oh yeah, that's that sour flavor. I mean, it's kind of amazing that they can artificially mimic that sort of thing. Yeah. But we've got some really interesting new varieties that have just finally started to produce in earnest. We've been transitioning from mostly the second generation trees at the orchard to now a third generation of trees. And they are much more dwarfing, so much so they can't support their own crop load just with their own root system. So they're built with the trellis system for support. The advantage is you can bring a new variety into the store a lot quicker. Usually within 3 years, you're getting a measurable crop off of those trees. So this year we've got a Pixie Crunch, which is a new variety for us. It's really been taking the audience by storm. They're really liking that one a lot.
And when's a good time to pick that one?
That one is picked and in the store. Okay. It's not a U-pick variety yet. We just don't have the volume for it. But we are putting some in locations for future U-pick. And then another one is Crimson Crisp. That's a fairly mm-hmm. new one for us as well. Very popular, looks like a Jonathan basically, but does not taste like a Jonathan. That one is available for U-pick right now as we speak. Depending on the traffic flow and how many people pick, that one probably won't last a long time because those trees are still relatively young, so they don't have a big crop on them. But we had them planted in more than one location, so I've got my pick for the store location that's pretty well removed from where the public typically has access, and then we've got some planted up close where the public can easily access them.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and gold.
And when's a good time to pick pumpkins this year?
We always open the patch around mid-September. And, I mean, there's a lot out there, so there's plenty out there. I've actually been picking some in the farther reaches of the patch and bringing them forward for my display. And the quality is actually good. I mean, you can find some big ones out there. I just don't see as many big ones, I think, as usual. And I attribute that to the drought, the dry weather. But pumpkins kind of are pretty drought tolerant, believe it or not. It's kind of surprising because they're so huge and leafy and, you know, and I mean, a pumpkin's, what, 85% water. So you'd think, well, you know, why would a plant like that like a drought? And it's partly because they put out roots all along the vine. And so if there's water anywhere to be had, they will find it. But this year, I think part of the issue was more heat stress than maybe water stress. You know, I know there was some water stress, but the heat stress will actually cause blooms to abort when they're trying to pollinate if you're in sustained 90-plus degree weather for very long. It's sort of, you know, corn pollination undergoes a similar challenge, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think there were gaps in the pollination and of the pumpkin crop. So you'll see they're ready, but some of them, I think, were delayed where, you know, one of their buddies would have set fruit earlier if he'd been available, but that dropped off, and so a later comer succeeded, but it's not going to get quite the size.
Yeah, and those overnight temperatures this summer were really, really high. We were looking at, for the whole Midwest region, it was the most humid summer on record as far as average dew point, so it's temperatures. Impromptu question thrown in, because you mentioned pollination. You know, pollination obviously being important for both apples and pumpkins. How do you all handle pollination, and are bees, if they're a major part of that, are they affected by the weather when during that kind of pollination season for both crops?
We do have beehives for pollination. I would say that beehives are much more effective for apple pollination than they are pumpkin pollination. And by that, I mean domesticated honeybees. Let me be specific. The pumpkin crop is pollinated more by wild ground-dwelling bees, and they seem to be fairly prevalent, and our honeybees actually did quite well this year. Bees mainly don't like too cold weather, and they don't like rainy, cloudy weather so much, so that they're a little more reluctant to fly in that sort of weather. And of this, I'm speaking of honeybees in particular. So the years we've seen issues is if you have a cold bloom time, like it'll warm up enough that the trees will bloom, and then all of a sudden you get this 2-week cold stretch where it's kind of gloomy and rainy and nasty. So the flower's sitting there begging to be pollinated, and there's nobody coming to do the work. So then you can have the blossom go through its whole cycle and not get pollinated. That's relatively rare to see, but I have seen it. I mean, I've seen about everything over the many years that I've been there. But this year they had a good pollination season. If you can get some sunny, really even one or two sunny 70-degree days during that pollination season, those bees will... It's remarkable how many blossoms they will pollinate in a day's time.
Yeah.
In the pumpkins, it's really interesting. There was a time when we would move the honeybee hives out to the pumpkin field to encourage them to pollinate the pumpkins. And what we found in our scouting was there weren't that many honeybees out there. They just don't really care much about pumpkin blossoms, it seems. But what we did find is lots of wild bees inside those pumpkin blossoms. And in talking to entomologists here at the university, we discovered, those are the ones that really love to do the pumpkin pollination. And so you things, you know, like you don't mow very often along your edges and stuff to encourage a good habitat for those ground-dwelling bees.
Gotcha.
Randy, Illinois is the largest producer of pumpkins of any state in the United States. What makes our state so well suited to pumpkins?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't know what makes it better necessarily than any other state. I think what you're seeing there is if I'm the average consumer, I'm thinking orange jack-o'-lantern pumpkin. But in reality, the pumpkin that puts us into that category is really the canning pumpkin. And those don't even really look like normal pumpkins. A lot of people wouldn't identify that as a pumpkin. It's sort of a tan, football-shaped, squash-looking thing. And for whatever reason, I think the canning companies found favorable conditions in Illinois, particularly in the Morton area. You see a lot of pumpkin production. And then they had canning facilities kind of located strategically around the state. There are somewhat fewer than there used to be, but there are still enough that 90% of pumpkins, particularly processing pumpkins, are grown in Illinois. And that's kind of a staggering number in my mind, you know, and kind of surprising. But I think it's, you know, heart of the Midwest, really good, rich soil. I mean, Illinois is very well known for that aspect. And it's relatively flat, which works well when you're harvesting these types of pumpkins. It's kind of stunning to watch how they harvest them. They actually kind of move them into rows and then pick them up with end loaders and stuff. And it's not a very delicate process when you see how they're harvested, but quality is very good. And then I just have to put a shout out to the University of Illinois, because 25 years ago, that pumpkin crop was severely threatened by disease issues that had cropped up and were appearing unsolvable. And University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign hired plant pathologist Dr. Muhammad Babadoust. He came here from the West, where he was working on wheat research and everything. And I actually had the privilege of sitting in on his candidacy among the other candidates for that position. And he was a person who had an eye toward practical solutions for the disease issues that farmers were facing. And he had a particular bent toward specialty crops. And he was hired and really has become famous in the pumpkin world for essentially saving the pumpkin industry from these disease issues that were really threatening the entire thing.
Let the years come and go, I'll still feel the glow that time cannot fade when I hear that lovely autumn serenade.
We didn't know anything about growing apples and pumpkins when we started. My father-in-law converted our farm from a corn and soybean and hog farm to a specialty crop farm with no knowledge of how to do that. And the fact that we live really close to the University of Illinois and their extension services really was the difference between success and failure for our farm. Oh. So we have a very soft spot in our heart for extension.
Yeah, it's research. Wonderful. Well, it's nice to be close to a little bit of a population center, too. It's
absolutely.
You don't have to drive 2 hours to go pick. You can just, especially with, you know, graduate students, and you mentioned international students who don't maybe have that experience as much. They can come out, and you just need a bus stop, I think, for you guys.
Exactly. We need a direct line.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and corn maze as well. You guys have a corn maze, right? Maze,
yeah. Yep.
Yes.
Yep. We have a number of mazes this year. We even have a zinnia maze, and people have been picking their own flower bouquets out there, and it's been very well received, you know, to come home with some flowers.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Yeah, lots of good stuff to check out this fall at Curtis Orchards. Well, thank you so much, Randy. That's all we have time for today, but appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Randy Graham is the co-owner and president of Curtis Orchard. For those just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the U of I.
And I'm Trent Ford, state climatologist at the Prairie Research Institute. And today, we're talking about changing leaves, growing apples and pumpkins, all things fall weather.
Have a weather or climate question you want us to tackle?
leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. Coming up next, we're talking about fall foliage and when to expect the first frost.